Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Melbourne City Council Future, Melbourne Committee number 24. It is Tuesday, the 16th of November, 2021, and it's 5:30 p.m. We're declaring the meeting open. I'm welcoming councillors, management, and thank you to the members of the public who are here in person or attending via video link. Thank you for attending our meeting this evening. The City of Melbourne respectfully acknowledges the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people on whose land we are gathering this evening, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present. We also respectfully acknowledge the Bunurong Boonwurrung, the Jaja Wurrung, the Tungurung and the Wadurung peoples who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we govern. We are committed to our reconciliation journey, recognising that every effort we make to strengthen relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples has a benefit for all Victorians. Despite the great strides forward we've made in managing the spread of COVID-19, we've still got some of these provisions that are applying to the way that we're operating here at Council, at least for the next little while. And pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, public attendance at council meetings, council and committee meetings, is limited in accordance with the state government's public health guidelines. Until 26 April 2022, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to attend. We can satisfy our public attendance test by ensuring that there is a live recording or live streaming, I should say, of the meeting, which we're doing as well. But we're really pleased in a COVID-safe way to be able to welcome some people into the Commons here at Town Hall as well. This meeting is being streamed live and an audio and video recording will be published on our council website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be made available on the council's website as soon as practicable. The agenda this evening comprises five reports from management and we've had an apology from Councillor Leloup. I'm advising members of the committee and the public where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six people voting in favour of it, then that decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a material or general conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of that item. We're up to confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting, councillors. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting minutes of open meeting number 23. It was held on Tuesday, the 9th of November. Councillor Chang, thank you. And a councillor to second, Councillor Ball, thank you. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. Councillors, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss at this time? None, thank you. Well, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's governance rules. In relation to agenda item 6.1, which is Ministerial Planning Referral, TPMR-2019-25/A, which is 52 to 60 Collins Street, 36 Collins Street and 57 to 67 Little Collins Street, Melbourne. We've had a request to speak from Billy Rabakis from Urbis and Julian Anderson from Bates Smart. In relation to agenda item 6.3, which is Carlton Heritage Review 2021, which is Planning Scheme Amendments C404 and C405 and the reinstatement of protection for Punt Road Oval, we've had items of correspondence from Mark Wang, Chief Executive Officer of the Museum of Chinese Australian History, Katie Roberts, John Jovic and Felicity Watson at the National Trust of Australia, Victoria. In relation to agenda item 6.5, which is Victorian Government Shared E-Scooter Trial, we've had an item of correspondence from Tim Brasher from the Yarra River Business Association. Thank you to everybody who has submitted and for those of you who have requested to speak to the committee this evening, you will be invited to make your presentation at the relevant agenda item. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee to assist you In adhering to that 3-minute time limit, there is a countdown clock either on your screen or here in the room. A bell goes when we've reached 2 minutes to let you know you have 1 minute left, and it'll go again when 3 minutes is up. And if you could finalise your presentation at that time, we would appreciate it. Thank you. We do allow time at our Future Melbourne Committee meetings for public questions at the start and the end, 15 minutes. We want to ensure that we can enable the public to continue to participate in Future Melbourne Committee meetings for public questions, and you can do that by submitting a written question or by registering to ask a question by audio link or phone. I'm advising the committee that as at 10 a.m. today, there were 3 written public questions received. In reading out these questions, I'm reading them verbatim. I'm not attesting at all to the veracity or the factual nature of the statements made. And I will then read the responses from our management team. The first question has been received from Tristan Davies. And Tristan says, in a recent quote given to CBD News, the Deputy Lord Mayor described the demolition of the Harbour Cave for a boutique hotel as an exciting project which will revitalise a tired section of Little Collins Street that will help bring back the buzz to this historic quarter of the city. Close quotes. The site, says Tristan, while fairly modest architecturally, is currently the home to one of Melbourne's most Instagrammed and unique laneway bars, also featured in City of Melbourne advertising. It's Chuckle Park, which is going to be replaced by a proposed austere luggage entry. An interior arcade housing, family-run multicultural restaurants and other spaces for affordable pop-up retail and hospitality, as well as a shoe repair shop approaching 40 years on the site that won a Lord Mayor's commendation in 2007, and until very recently an upstairs nightclub that was one of the CBD's last remaining alternative nightlife and live performance spaces, featured in 2019 Melbourne Music Week, which closed with its lease ending upon approval of this hotel development. Is it the council's position, as implied by the Deputy Lord Mayor's quotes, that all described above, all those businesses described above, should be summarised as tired and lacking in buzz, and that boutique hotels and luxury shops are an inherent improvement on them when the two conflict? Tristan, I'm now reading a response provided by Crystal Maynard, who's the Acting Director, Planning and Building. And it goes like this. We recognise that development in the central city can sometimes result in a change of use that impacts existing activities and businesses. However, the planning scheme is not able to control the loss of uses or require a new building to retain existing uses, particularly in the vital economic environment of the capital city zone, which is purposefully set up to maximise flexibility of uses. With a few exceptions, change of use does not trigger the need for a planning permit in the central city. The proposed redevelopment of Hub Arcade complies with the built form controls and the design parameters of the recently introduced DD01 planning provisions governing urban design in the capital city zone. The development is expected to provide activation and diversity due to the boutique nature of the proposed small hotel, which maintains retail tenancies to the street frontage, preserves a pedestrian connection through the site, and fully utilises upper levels. Thanks for your question, Tristan. I'm now reading the first written question we've received from Chris Thrum. Tomorrow is Oz Music T-shirt Day. Melbourne is the capital of music in Australia. City of Melbourne has confirmed this by its ongoing commitment to Melbourne Music Week and support of the music community during the pandemic. The question is, would the Lord Mayor and councillors consider going to a record store in the CBD today or tomorrow to buy a couple of T-shirts in support of the music industry? I'm looking at lots of nodding heads here, Chris. So expect all of our social media accounts to go crazy with Australian music T-shirts. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, and thank you for being part of our music sector. Might be on Friday. Is that what you say? Yeah, we've got record stores. We'll be sending a list around, Councillor Ball.
Reed,
there's
a great collection of records.
Yep. And I should say, we say we absolutely value Melbourne's music industry, which helps make our city, Australia's arts, cultural and events capital. The City of Melbourne is directly supporting the music industry, as you said, through Melbourne Music Week, which will help provide a significant boost to more than 300 artists and reignite the city as we continue to bounce back from the pandemic. I know we're all starting to book tickets for Melbourne Music Week. I'm now reading out a second question received from Chris Thrum. The pandemic bill before the Upper House appears heavy-handed. Should there be an independent oversight and independent review process in place? Is it necessary to not have a sunset clause? I'm reading a response from Russell Webster, who's our Director of Health and Wellbeing, Chris. Chris, thank you for your question. The bill has been proposed by the Victorian Government, is presently before the Legislative Council. It's not appropriate for the City of Melbourne to make a comment on this matter. Chris, as always, thanks for your participation in our meeting. We're up to item 6, which is reports from management. At this point, I call on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Nicholas Rees, to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the City Planning Portfolio. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. And there are 3 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. The first of those is Agenda Item 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPMR-2019-25/A for the property 52-60 Collins Street, 36 Collins Street and 57-67 Little Collins Street, Melbourne. This is a very significant new tower proposal for the city, so I am going to suggest that we do indeed get a presentation from City of Melbourne officer. So I'm going to call
Deputy Lord Mayor, before we do, can I declare a conflict, please, a material conflict of interest? I'm a director of the Municipal Association of Victoria, which is a tenant of 60 Collins Street. Whilst the threshold question of demolition has already been answered, I did declare a conflict in March 2020, so I'll do so again now. Thank you.
It's a line ball call, but you've erred very much on the side of caution, Councillor Lippitt. Okay, Officer Matthew Metaxas, if you could please present on this item and please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
No worries. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Next slide, please. So the subject site, as you note, is on the corner of Collins and Exhibition Street in Melbourne. The subject site where the existing approval is located is on those two, bottom parcels on your screen, the southwest corner of the site. This proposal is proposing to include the other two additional parcels to the application. I will note that this was previously approved by FMC in March 2020 with additional conditions regarding the heritage matters and overshadowing to Collins Place. Next slide, please. As we can see on this aerial, there's the Melbourne Club, which is a VHR building. It's protected by Heritage Victoria. It is noted that there is no buildings and works proposed on either 36 Collins Street or 57-67 Little Collins Street. Next slide, please. This is the subject site in context of other towers in the immediate surrounds, considering that this proposal is seeking to increase the overall height by approximately 55 metres to 156 metres is the new proposed height. We see that there's numerous buildings in and around that immediate context that are greater in height overall. Next slide, please. So the proposal is seeking to increase the overall height and scale from 35,000 square metres gross floor area to 58,000 square metres in gross floor area and increase that building height from 101 to 156 metres. As you can see on the image below, the street wall or that podium height isn't proposing to change. It remains at 80 metres in height. There is a loss of some retail space in the basement of the building. However, that's going to be taken up through bicycle parking as well as end-of-trip facilities. Next slide, please. This is the same image as the previous slide, but it's just showing the site in context, particularly the addition to the eastern side of the form, which abuts Melbourne Club. As we can see there, there's a significant change in the design of the building, seeking to reflect the heritage nature of the area without mimicking it. Next slide, please. Speaking to the heritage of the site and the surrounding context, this is a view from Spring Street down to Collins Street looking westward, and we can really see it in the building sitting above all the other buildings in that context. It's critical to note, though, that the form of this proposal compared to the previous proposal, the approved permit, includes interfaces to that eastern side, including offices that overlook to the east and provide views to that side of the building. Next slide, please. This is that eastern facade and a critical facade in our decision-making or our recommendation-making process. As we can see here, the approved design was fairly blank. There is glazing to that side. However, it's mixed with solid concrete panel. And what the new proposal does is, whilst much of that eastern side is back of house, it does include windows to service the occupants of the building. Next slide, please. This is the proposed floor facade at the ground floor level along Collins Street. As we can see, Melville House is being retained. There is no further demolition proposed to Melville House, and the development area remains the same as the approved development. We can see critically in this image that there is a through link that runs from Collins Street through the building itself down to McGrath's Lane and then onto Little Collins Street. It's critical to note that the through link is only going to be open and accessible to the public from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on all days except public holidays, and this is captured via a condition that's proposed to remain on that permit. Next slide, please. This is just the through link again, showing that there's also access to it via Exhibition Street, and there will be open to air part of the through link at both the Collins Street and McGrath's Lane interface. And our final slide, please. This is the, I guess, a very technical part of the proposal where they're seeking to include airspace slots to the site, despite the application seeking to incorporate the additional land at 36 Collins and 57 to 67 Collins. This is effectively to ensure that there are air and light rights along this space, but also to ensure that should any future development occur on either of these parcels, which is highly unlikely due to the heritage nature, there won't be a requirement to close off any windows that are on the boundary. Final slide. That's all from me. You're welcome.
Any questions for Matthew? No, in that case, thanks very much for addressing us this evening. I now call on Bill Rabakis from Urbis, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, I believe, Billy, and please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Oh, there I am. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors for allowing us to present this proposal tonight. And also thank you to planning officers who remain professional as always through the process. This image on the screen shows a refined architectural response holding the corner of Collins and Exhibition Street with a setback behind Melville House. It also, this elevation shows a result of extensive consultation with the OVGA, City of Melbourne Urban Designers, and the Heritage Officers. Next slide, please. So as Matt discussed, this application proposes a Section 72 amendment to introduce the two Melbourne Club sites at 36 Collins Street and 57 Little Collins Street to the planning permit. This effectively increases the area of the site by 4 times, while the floor area of the building is increased by approximately 20,000 square metres. Floor area ratio is decreased from 18:1 to 8.72:1, while the height of the building is increased by approximately 55 metres. The proposal is for 42,000 square metres of net leasable area of premium grade office, which we hope will provide significant confidence to the commercial market as Melbourne continues its post-COVID recovery. Street wall height is unchanged at 80 metres, while bicycle spaces are increased by approximately 200. And we just confirm that no works are proposed to the Melbourne Club land itself. Next slide, please. So to facilitate this development, we propose a 9.4-metre light and air easement adjacent to the site on the Melbourne Club sites. This is a three-dimensional air lot that starts above 40 metres and rises to the height of the tower. We also propose a restriction on title in the event of a catastrophic fire or the like, that the land is restricted to the floor area ratio controls of the time minus the proposed building. We note the planning scheme contemplates this scenario of securing floor area rights across a larger site, particularly adjacent to a heritage building. Next slide, please. These diagrams simply show how the floor plates remain compliant, adjusting for a more usable floor plate to the north and introducing a setback behind Melville House to the south. Next slide, please. We confirm that channeling to the Collins Place forecourt, which was raised at the last FMC meeting on this proposal, is minimised to just an average of 15% between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. during the day. The previous condition on the existing permit was a maximum of 30%, so we easily comply. Next slide, please. Importantly, the proposal complies with the new DDO1 requirements, activating the corner of Collins and Exhibition Streets, while ground floor servicing is minimised as much as possible to just 13%, noting DDO1 allows a maximum of 40%. Next slide, please. And just to summarise, we think the building makes a positive contribution to the city skyline and will sit comfortably within its surrounds, as can be seen by this elevation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Billy. Any questions for Billy? All right, thank you very much for presenting to us this evening. I now call on Julian Anderson from Bates Smart to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, Julian.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to present this very exciting scheme. Next slide, please. One of the key moves in the project, as has already been articulated, is the creation of a new link through the site connecting McGrath Lane to the north with Collins Street to the south. This is a very clearly defined, publicly accessible route through the site, which we believe will enhance connectivity and contribute to much greater permeability. Certainly the intention is to provide a more lively and enjoyable environment both within and around the building. There are three primary entries on Collins Street, McGrath Lane and Exhibition Street, and the lobby is very generously proportioned with both double and triple height spaces. Next slide, please. And the project has been designed with the principles described in the Melbourne Design Guide in mind. So we've done things like focused on maximising activation of the public realm, including providing an occupiable lobby lounge space adjacent to the entry on Collins Street. We have minimised the impact of vehicle entry points on the site and, in fact, have reduced the number of existing vehicle crossovers on the site from 3 down to 1. Ground floor activity within the lobby is further enhanced with the provision of a retail space in the northeastern corner of the site. Next slide, please. And importantly, the proposal does seek to reinforce the existing and historic character of Collins Street, which we know is one of sophistication, enduring elegance, grandeur and permanence. Next slide, please. And at that lower level, the podium does provide a very fine-grained, low-level streetscape, which responds to the character, texture and materiality of the adjacent and nearby heritage buildings. Next slide, please. This certainly is also evidence when looking towards the Collins Street entry, as Billy's already commented. One of the things we do like about this is the fact that we've recessed the entry so that we can actually enjoy the side elevation of Melville House and appreciate the building more fully than is currently achievable. Next slide, please. And certainly each component has been considered and designed to respond appropriately to both Melville House, the overall streetscape and the Melbourne Club, which you can see in the foreground on the right there. Next slide, please. And we do believe that we have the potential to very successfully activate the corner of Exhibition and Collins Street, which we know is such an important piece of Melbourne. Next slide, please. Shifts in materiality, proportion and scale allow separate elements of the building to remain legible and contextually appropriate. Next slide, please. The commercial floor plate is relatively diminutive, which is contributing, we think, to the elegant proportions of the project. Multiple terraces throughout the building allow good access to fresh air throughout. Next slide, please. And certainly we're very focused on achieving the highest levels of environmental and sustainability design certification, and these are key design aspirations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Julian. Any questions for Julian? No? In that case, we thank you for presenting to us this evening. I would now request that a motion, which should be appearing on the screen, be appeared, and that is indeed an amended motion. Yep, just confirming that is the correct motion. I'm going to move that motion that's appearing on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Deutsch. And I'll now speak to this matter. This is a ministerial planning referral from the Victorian Planning Minister. The amendment that is before us does seek to increase the height and gross floor area of the tower and incorporates the properties to the east associated with the Melbourne Club and to the north along 57 to 67 Little Collins Street. The applicant, as we have heard, is Dexus Funds Management and represented by or assisted by Urbis, with the architect Bates Smart, and the owners of the property are Dexus Funds Management and Black Swan Properties and Cygnus Properties as well. Can I begin by congratulating the applicants for the ingenuity they have shown in bringing this amended application before us, both in terms of architecture and technical planning expertise. There is a lot of very clever thinking which has gone into this application that is before us this evening, and dare I say some commercial ingenuity as well. As councillors, we can only guess at the sum that has been paid to the Melbourne Club for the purchase of those air rights, but I'm sure that is something which would be to the agreement of the Melbourne Club. They otherwise wouldn't have signed on. But what it has meant is that in terms of floor area ratios and other requirements of our planning scheme, this development does have considerable more room to move and now does comfortably comply, certainly in terms of height and bulk, with the requirements of the relevant controls. I should also say that this location on the corner of Exhibition Street and Collins Street is as prestigious as it gets in terms of Australian corporate real estate. This is probably the best business address in the country, and so it's only right that we as councillors look for a building that achieves the absolute highest standards in terms of design, in terms of built quality, and in terms of sustainability as well. And I'm delighted to be able to say that this is a building that designs that delivers on all of those aspects. As we heard from Julian from Bates Smart, there are some significant changes that have been made to the building since it was previously before council. Council has considered this application before and did support it, but it was a heavily conditioned support. And what I can say is this application before us this evening is significantly improved in terms of the design. As we heard, that involves the layout of the floors. There's also been some changes to the basement as well. And what we get is a building that I think sits better on this corner. I think the through block link to McGrath's Lane provides a better articulation for pedestrians through Melbourne. And I'm delighted to see that the building at the street level it references Collins Street heritage and materiality, and indeed that additional condition that is included in the recommendation this evening does just confirm the use of natural stone material within the feature masonry finishes at that street level. Given this is the most prestigious street, business street in Australia. We want to see that we continue to see that natural stone, those high quality masonry finishes, and that condition just ensures that that is locked in, so that future generations of Melburnians who walk along Collins Street can continue to see these beautiful buildings that will stand the test of time. And the beauty of those natural materials is they actually get better as they age. So in terms of the key issues for consideration, they include height and scale. As I have flagged, that with the agreement that's been reached with the Melbourne Club, the purchase of the air rights and the consolidation of the site, the floor area ratio now comfortably sits below 18 to 1. Actually, it comes in at 8.72 to 1. And some of the other design changes and setbacks mean that it comfortably complies. The minister who, when he approved this previously, did put some requirements around the publicly accessible private square at Collins Place, and that he set a minimum of a 30% limit for overshadowing. And this proposal before us this evening has a 15% overshadowing, so again, comfortably complies. So for all those reasons and more, I recommend the recommendation to you and look forward to councillors voting on it shortly. Councillor Doige.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I pretty much agree with everything the Deputy Lord Mayor has said. And I too welcome the amendment, you know, at any time in our city's history, but especially at this time in our city's recovery. I welcome the investment being put into this building and particularly in the amendment. So I too support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Doige. Any other speakers for or against this item? Councillor Ball.
I was just wondering at the amendment, I hadn't seen that prior. Has that been circulated?
Yes, I believe it was circulated. I certainly sent it through to Michael Tonta and Councillor Services for circulation. Right, I apologise if that then wasn't circulated to councillors. If you have any questions about it, Councillor Ball, please fire away. I'm happy to provide some further explanation to it if you'd like now.
Is it different from what is being proposed already, or is it making it conditional that that must be retained?
It strengthens the requirement that the podium level of the building has the highest quality materials, including natural stone, which is in keeping with the heritage materials that you see along Collins Street. And while the applicant does currently intend that to be the case, by including that condition there, it just makes it absolutely certain. So it strengthens that particular requirement of the building. All right, well, if there aren't any further submissions, we'll put this matter to the vote. I will just exercise my final right to respond on this and just point out that this is a close to $300 million building. It's got a market value of $1 billion, and what a terrific vote of confidence in Melbourne to see an application like this coming forward at this time. And this will be, when we see it go forward, a big and important part of Melbourne's recovery. So on that note, I call all those councillors in favour of the motion to please raise their hand, and I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us, we'll ask for Councillor Leppett to please return. Thank you, Councillor Ball, for your assistance there. We'll just wait for Councillor Leppett. Thanks, Councillor Leppett. The next agenda item is 6.2 for planning permit application TP-2020-477 for the property 355 to 369 Spencer Street, West Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? I'll take that as a no. We had no submitters on this item, so I will move a recommendation which will be now appearing on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'll now speak to this item. So, look, this application is seeking a planning permit for approval for use of the land for the sale and consumption of liquor associated with a bar and restaurant, some external alterations and external painting in a heritage overlay, a waiver of the car parking requirements of clause 5206 and a waiver of the bicycle facilities requirement of clause 52.34 on the property at 355 to 369 Spencer Street. I should point out that the City of Melbourne received some 50 objections to this application, and so for this reason, and I believe because of the heritage overlay, the matter has come before us as councillors. The key issues for consideration are the appropriateness of the proposed licensed premises in a mixed-use zone, the appropriateness of the car parking and bicycle parking waivers, and the appropriateness of the proposed works to the significant heritage building. As the officer's report, I believe, does make very clear, subject to the conditions, the proposed licensed premises is considered to be acceptable as the hours, patronage and potential noise sources comply with relevant policy, which seeks to preserve the amenity of the surrounds. And we should note that the hours of operation have been reduced from what was originally applied for. There was originally a 3 a.m. licence that was being sought. Now it's an 11 p.m. Licence. And the car parking and bicycle parking waivers are also considered to be acceptable, given that they are only minor in nature, 7 car parking spaces and 3 bike parking spaces. And this is a site that is very well serviced by public transport. And then finally, in regards to heritage, changes that are being proposed are very minor indeed and certainly acceptable in the broader context of this site. So for all those reasons, I do recommend the recommendation to councillors. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. The hours of operation of the licensed venue was the main point of contention, and as you say, the hours have now been reduced to no later than 11 p.m. and that's going to be set by condition. So that's directly consistent with our local policy, and it's very clear that a permit should issue for this application. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Are there any councillors who wish to speak for or against this motion? In that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. And I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us is agenda item 6.3, Carlton Heritage Review 2021, Planning Scheme Amendments C404 and C405, and reinstatement of protection for Punt Road Oval. I believe there are a number of councillors who have indicated that they may have a conflict of interest in this agenda item. Do councillors want to individually declare that now?
Deputy Lord Mayor, I'll declare a material conflict of interest. A fellow running mate on our election campaign ticket in 2020 owns an apartment in a building proposed for a heritage overlay. She also made a contribution to the campaign. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett.
The same material conflict applies to me for the same reasons.
Thank you, Councillor Ball. And I too need to declare a conflict due to my employment at the University of Melbourne, and the university-owned properties are affected by one of the proposed changes in the heritage overlay. Given that is the case, I would call on the Lord Mayor to chair this. I need to hand over to the CEO, and I will now leave the room.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Look, and it's a procedural matter. My name's Justin Henney. I'm the Chief Executive Officer. Consistent with Council's governance rules and the Council resolution on the 15th of December 2020, the committee will now need to vote to appoint a chair for this item. So I call for nominations for acting chair for this item. Lord Mayor Sally Capp, is there someone to second that motion? Councillor Hakim, would anyone like to speak to the motion? For or against, all those in favour of that motion? Lord Mayor Sally Capp, over to you to chair. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this agenda item? We do, so we're calling on Sophie Handley to come forward and provide us with a presentation on this item. And just to remind everybody, it is the Carlton Heritage Review. Over to you, Sophie. Thanks.
Good evening, Lord Mayor and Councillors. We're here to present to you tonight the recently finalised Carlton Heritage Review and associated amendments C404 and C405. Next slide, please. The Carlton Heritage Review is one of many heritage reviews underway at the moment, a fundamental part of the heritage program. The Carlton Heritage Review is the first of the neighbourhood reviews to be progressed and will be followed by North Melbourne early in 2022, followed by South Yarra later in 2022. As we know, Carlton is one of the oldest and most cherished neighbourhoods in Melbourne. The Heritage Overlay No. 1, Carlton Precinct, is the oldest precinct in the City of Melbourne and also in the state. The way that Carlton presents today, with its beautiful intact streetscapes, is largely due to the way that heritage policy has consistently been applied over the time in this area. Slide three. Next slide, please. In 2018, Lovell Chen Heritage Consultants were commissioned to undertake the Heritage Review. They were briefed to review all places in the study area with and without existing controls and correct mapping and addressing anomalies, of which there were many, it turns out. They developed a new thematic environmental history based around engagement with traditional custodians and uncovering themes of immigration, social housing, and other aspects of the distinct culture of Carlton. Next slide, please. The final recommendations of the study are to apply the heritage overlay to 24 new places, change the existing heritage categories or gradings for 52 places, remove the heritage overlay from 7 places due to demolition, significant change or incorrect application, and fix up some historical errors and anomalies such as mapping and addresses. Next slide, please. These are some images of Victorian era places that are receiving new documentation in the form of citations and have, and also having their information amended through the amendment. Lincoln Square is receiving protection for the first time and will be added to Heritage Overlay No. 1. Next slide, please. This depicts the Federation and Edwardian era, and at the top and bottom there you can see buildings from the former Pelham Street Children's Hospital. These are now forming a precinct along with other buildings in this complex. The Chinese Church of Christ on Queensbury Street is receiving protection for the first time and has a significant social history that is being reflected in this new citation. That was one of the items of the submission that you would have received yesterday. Next slide, please. This is a few of the interwar places in the review. On the bottom right, we have the RMIT building number 71, an interwar beauty, which is being protected for the first time. The Clyde and Lincoln hotels are already protected, but their documentation is changing and the Clyde Hotel is being upgraded from contributory to significant. Next slide, please. Lastly, we have our post-war and post-modern building group. At the bottom left, we have an example of one of the buildings from the Ministry of Housing infill housing program from the 1980s. This particular house was designed by the renowned architects Edmund and Corrigan. We have the Japanese Brutalist Royal Women's Hospital car park on Grattan Street at the bottom right. And at the top right, we have one of the three buildings that make up the proposed RMIT serial listing for buildings 51, 56 and 57 constructed in the 1970s. Next slide. Significant consultation has already occurred at the beginning stages of this project. Further opportunities for landowners and members of the public to have their say will occur throughout the amendment process. Next slide, please. Although not in Carlton and has been mentioned already, Amendment C405 also includes the reinstatement of heritage protection at the Punt Road Oval in East Melbourne on a permanent basis. Heritage protection was previously deleted from this planning scheme inventory in error. Interim protection for the site has been applied through a ministerial amendment, which was approved on the 28th of October, while C405 is in process. And I would also just like to note that we've been working very closely with the Richmond Football Club through this rectification process. Next slide, please. So despite the fact that this project's been going on for some time and the council officers have been working diligently on it, you can see by this slide we're at the beginning of the formal amendment process. And there's obviously plenty of opportunity for further consultation with the community through the formal exhibition process, as well as opportunities to come back to council where people will be in a position to address councillors. And that's the last. Next slide is the last slide. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. Councillors, any questions for Sophie at this point? No? I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion that is appearing, not that one, but that one. Thank you. In relation to the Carlton Heritage Review 2021, moved by Councillor Griffiths, thank you, and seconded by Councillor Chang, thank you. Over to you, Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and obviously with a piece of work that is as big and significant as the Carlton Heritage Review, there are a number of thank yous. Starting with Sophie and your team, thank you so much for all of the work that council officers have put into the preparation of this document and for the presentation that we've just had there. A picture does tell a thousand words at times, and seeing the images of some of the buildings that are discussed in the document, I think just further emphasises why they're so important. I'd also like to thank the consultants, Lovell Chen, and also note that while we are missing a few councillors in the room tonight, that I know that they are also very committed to the work around preserving heritage across the City of Melbourne and quite particularly in Carlton as well. So thank you to them. As Sophie noted in her report, Carlton's been loved for a long, long time, not just by its local residents, but by people right across the city. And that's why, all the way back in 1984, it was the subject of the first heritage order. And as we noted in some of the pictures that we saw there, that was mainly Victorian and Edwardian buildings that were being covered at the time. But of course, we know that it's the interplay of those buildings and so many of the other architectural styles that came after that really makes Carlton such a treasure trove of exciting and interesting places. For me, it was a wonderful reminder to see one of the pictures up there of the house in Kay Street. Kay Street was the first street that I moved into when I moved out of college, and the building that appeared in the lower left-hand slide that you showed before was what I used to see out the window of my bedroom across the road, and I was fascinated by it then, although I had absolutely no knowledge of its significance, and I used this as an opportunity to go for a nice dog walk through Carlton this weekend and lecture my dogs and my son on many of the sites in that area. So it was a wonderful opportunity to go around and revisit some of those places that are special to me. Of course, I'm only one person, but it's fantastic to see just how many responses and how many people were involved in the consultation. That all requires work, both from council officers and from the consultants. So, again, a thank you on that front for the work that goes into making that consultation happen. And particular thanks to the Carlton Community History Group, the Carlton Residents Association, everyone who participated through Participate Melbourne, and also I saw that there were a number of primary school students who were involved, and I think that's fantastic and ties back into so much of what we said in our council plan about hearing the voices of everyone who lives in the city, not just those who are 18 and old enough to vote. So with all of those thank yous, and noting as well, as Sophie did, that the Punt Road Oval is a significant part of what we're considering tonight, I really want to say a final thank you to everyone who worked on the review. Highly recommend it as a motion tonight, but also highly recommend it as a read for anyone who wants to be educated about the streets that we walk down in our community. So with all of that said, I recommend the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Over to you, Councillor Chang. Thanks.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Griffiths. I can't really say much after that, but anecdotally, I enjoy visiting Carlton, especially Lincoln Square with my daughter, and walking around the streets of Carlton and seeing all the beautiful buildings. I think this overlay really highlights and acknowledges the importance of the history of the buildings of Australia and Melbourne. And, you know, hearing my daughter go, "Daddy, look at that red building, look at that brown building," and just enjoying the different styles and unique architecture, and that's a three-year-old girl talking about it. So I can imagine, you know, we've really preserved something for the future generations. So thank you to the officers for your hard work, and yeah, I commend this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Chang. Are there any other speakers to this motion? None? Well, I'd just like to say, of course, Carlton is one of our oldest and most cherished suburbs. There's an enormous amount of work that goes into these reviews, as already has been said, so I wanted to add my thanks to our officers, everyone who's been involved, together with councillors who have also participated, but importantly also these processes really reach out and embrace the community and get them involved in really important conversations. And, of course, it's got to the point where other suburbs are now clamouring for a similar process in their neighbourhoods. I take that as a very positive sign. Carlton Precinct is the oldest precinct in the city of Melbourne, one of the oldest in the state. The review involved extensive engagement. As I said, Lovell Chen's made a number of recommendations, and I think it reminds us that it is time to be thoughtful and to make an investment in what's happened in our past just to ensure that there's ongoing value into the future. I'm really happy to support this motion this evening. If there are no other speakers, I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. And if we could invite our councillors back into the meeting, that would be terrific. Thanks, team. Welcome back, councillors. We're up to agenda item 6.4, which has been withdrawn from the agenda, which brings us to agenda item 6.5, Victorian Government Shared E-Scooter Trial. Would anybody like a presentation on this item? No? Well, then we'll put the motion up there, and I'm going to move this motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Campbell. Thank you very much. Well, again, thanks to our team for all of the work that's gone into progressing our involvement in the Victorian Government's e-scooter trial. We were selected as one of the four local government areas to participate in this trial. We think participation in trials like this are important for our city. As e-scooters become more popular, an absolute proliferation, it seems, over the COVID period. But as it's become a more popular mode of transport, we know that various issues have arisen both for the users of e-scooters, for pedestrians, for motorists, for public transport users. And we know that the Victorian Government is now considering the regulation of the use of e-scooters. And by being involved in this trial, we give ourselves the best chance to be at the table to provide feedback that is valuable, that is relevant to our municipality, and that will go into the consideration for decisions made on what will then impact our city in the years ahead. We've already had excellent ongoing partnerships with the City of Yarra and the City of Port Phillip around the e-bike trial, so we've already worked well in this regard. And during that trial, we were able to identify issues such as safety measures, understand infrastructure requirements, and also look to learn from commuter uptake. And many of the lessons from the e-bike trial, I think, will also be valuable as we move forward into this e-scooter trial, as I said, also in partnership with Yarra and Port Phillip. The City of Melbourne at this point has invited e-scooter operators to participate in the trial through an expression of interest process. We anticipate multiple operators based on all of the unsolicited bids we've had on this topic so far, and then we move forward with some of those operators so that we can work with them to improve service standards both for the commuters and for other stakeholders in our city. As part of that process, we will be entering agreements with the successful operators. These agreements will set out the framework and also the areas that we want to explore and ensure that our officers can look for compliance for pedestrians and road user safety, for vehicle standards and for training requirements, to name a few. I know that our officers are keen to get this started and start to be more proactive around the way that e-scooters move around our city. Similar to the e-bike trial, just to allay some of the people that have already written to us about their fears for e-scooters, we will be requiring e-scooter operators to include measures that prevent vandalism, that look to manage abandonment of scooters and look to better manage cluttered roadways and footpaths. And the best way that we can manage this for the future is to be involved in this trial. So thanks to all of our officers, and looking forward to seeing how this plays out, hopefully from December onwards. And I'm going to hand over to Councillor Campbell to talk about some of the other benefits. Thanks. Okay, so we've got, as we're sitting here, a proposed amendment to this motion, which is correct, and that is that the Future Melbourne Committee endorses management's approach to planning and launching the shared e-scooter trial. Thank you, councillors, for picking that up. And I'm moving this, noting that it was discussed earlier today. So I'm happy to move this as amended, and I'm handing over to you, Councillor Campbell. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you for making that amendment. I echo the Lord Mayor's comments. It is critical that the City of Melbourne have a say at the decision-making table as we roll out this new form of transport. And I'm particularly delighted to see that the one or more e-scooter operators who are selected will be required to monitor response times to resolving problems. And as those problems are identified, I do encourage constituents and visitors to the City of Melbourne to raise them, because we want to make this as seamless a rollout as possible to identify the issues, and so that we can incorporate this additional form of transport into our city in a way that means our streets are more vibrant, more people are coming in, which we all know is a goal we're working towards at the City of Melbourne, and to make sure that we minimise any problems. But I am very excited to see how this unfolds, and I look forward to the City of Melbourne playing its part in this pilot.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Are there any other speakers to our e-scooter trial motion this evening? None at this point. Okay, I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Which brings us to agenda item 6.6, which is Melbourne Knowledge Week 2020 planning phase. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this item? No. Then I'm going to look for a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Griffiths, thank you. And a councillor who is seconding the motion. Councillor Campbell, thank you very much. Over to you, Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm not just pleased, I'm excited to be able to talk to this motion tonight. I had to go back and edit my little speaking notes because I realised I had used the word fantastic far too many times in one page worth of notes. But I will use every opportunity that I get to talk about education and innovation and knowledge in the City of Melbourne because it's something that is just so important to the life of the city. Knowledge Week will be May next year, and I know that May might seem like a long time away, but we know that the amount of planning and preparation that needs to go into major events like Knowledge Week is an enormous amount of work, and for that reason it needs to start early. And so I really want to say thank you to Louise and all of her team and others who've already got the work underway on getting things ready for Knowledge Week. It's being done at a time when there are many balls to keep in the air with many events coming up. But what a fantastic thing that is, that it's really possible to look forward for months and months and months worth of exciting opportunities to encourage people to come into the city. Great overlap with this one, of course, is that we get to talk about one of the things that is so fundamental to what it is that we want our city to be, and that is the number one student city in the world, the city that revels in the sharing of knowledge and education. So I hope that the excitement that we have here in Council permeates out into the broader community and is particularly picked up upon by the retail and hospitality locations that are around what's going to become the Knowledge District during Knowledge Week, and that they all start to put their thinking caps on about how they can be part of the process and just value add to the experience of everyone who comes in to be part of Knowledge Week 2022.
Fantastic. Thank you, Councillor Griffiths. To you, Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillor Griffiths. I share your enthusiasm. And we know, particularly after these lockdowns, that events like Knowledge Week are one of the most important ways we have to drive visitation back to our city. I've been delighted to see the increase in attendance at Knowledge Week year after year. And as someone who tried to book into many events that sold out quickly last year, I think it's good we've got lots of warning so that people can get ready, because you're going to have to hit the keyboard when this one opens up. But perhaps most excitingly, the fact that the vast majority, almost 90% of the events are free, I think is a delightful part of Knowledge Week, and why I think it's something that should be accessible and inclusive, and is. So I'm looking forward to the program being released and the benefits to the city and its activation.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Any other speakers to this motion this evening? Knowledge Week? No, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. So we're declaring that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. This concludes reports from management for consideration in open session this evening. Are there any items of urgent business, councillors, for consideration? None at this point. Well, thank you very much. That means that we can say that our 15 minutes of public question time was exhausted at the start of the meeting with our three questions from the public, and we can move to say thank you to the public for your interest, to our officers for preparation and attendance, and same to you, councillors. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed at 6:33 p.m. Good night. Thank you.